doing this series in parables, and our tagline is timeless truths, both concealed and revealed. Jesus used these stories to reveal his truth to his followers, specifically his disciples, and conceal the truth from the Pharisees who were often not far from him when he was teaching. But before we jump into this parable, I want you to think back to a time when you had a job, where you had time that maybe you weren't as closely supervised as other times. And maybe during those times you were unsupervised, you didn't use the time as honorably as you could. And the reason why I'm asking you to think back, because I believe all of you, if left unsupervised, you do your jobs to the best of your ability to honor your boss. That's what I choose to believe from the platform this morning. But I want you to think back to a time when maybe you didn't honor your employer that well. There was a time when I worked at an ice rink my senior year in high school, and for a lot of reasons, I thought, man, this is a cake job. I get to punch out of work and go to hockey practice and punch back in, finish my homework, work in the pro shop. I used to teach the Learn to Skate program, lots of little kids and very uncoordinated adults there. Took that very seriously. But it was my time as a skate guard that there were some, let's call them misfires and mishaps with me and my friends. We had a Zamboni driver named Homer, and he was lots of fun, and he was so much fun that he found himself fired. And so that meant the manager, Norm, who was overseeing a bunch of high school knucklehead hockey players, supposedly making the rink safe for skaters of all abilities. That was our job. But there was a period where he's driving his Zamboni, and we knew that meant there was a period of time where we were left unsupervised. And I want to be honest with you, there are times we acted like Norm was never coming back to the building. There was one day in particular, we decided to goof off and we would do, we would call them ice spray challenges. We would do hockey stops close to the boards to see who could spray ice the highest against the glass. And some of us could clear the glass because we were just idiots. And there was a big puddle of water, and one of the guys on the hockey team was, you know, skate guarding, wearing the jacket, dressed for his date, and he slipped and fell and just sopped up all the water in the puddle that was left behind. It looked fantastic for his date. We gave him a really hard time. Then there was another time where we played this game called It Tag, and all that means if you get tagged, you're it. And I remember we thought Norm was still outside dumping the ice out of the Zamboni. We hadn't let people back onto the ice yet. And he comes walking out onto the ice, and he is furious. And we were idiots, so we skated up to him and sprayed ice all over him. And he looked at us, and he said, "Are you guys actually going to work today? Or are you going to keep acting like a bunch of expletive idiots?" And there was a part of me that was embarrassed that we got caught acting like fools. There's a part of me that found it funny. And so I just laughed at him, and I was like, "I'm so sorry, Norm," and I could not keep it together. And I look back on that, and sometimes I laugh at my former self, but I recognize there's a spiritual truth there. And some of you can think back to your jobs. Maybe it was in fast food. You know, you're stealing maybe a chicken nugget while you're working at McDonald's, or maybe it's just being lazy. You could look back and say, if I was honest, I did not work like my supervisor was going to come back and check on me. Why do we share a story like that? Because we are in a series of parables in Matthew chapter 25. I want you to turn there. We just talked about the parable of the bridesmaids, where you had foolish and wise bridesmaids. You had some that were ready. They had the oil of preparedness. They brought extra oil, knowing the king would be delayed. They lived their life knowing the return of Christ could be long delayed. And then you had some that didn't live with any kind of preparedness. They were not true followers of Jesus. But as we're picking up in the same chapter, we're wanting to start with this thought this morning, that we should work with an understanding, just like I should have worked with an understanding as a skate guard, that my manager wasn't far away. We should work with the understanding that when the king returns, faithful servants will be rewarded while the faithless are exposed. That's slide 3, David. Faithful servants will be rewarded while the faithless are exposed. That's what's coming. And like I said, there's a context, very similar, same context exactly. Going back to Matthew chapter 24, Jesus makes some comments about his return, and there's some themes in there that play out in these parables. I read to you a few verses last week. I'm going to read to you some different ones. This is Matthew 24, verses 44 through 51. He says, "Therefore, you must also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over his household to give them food at the proper time? Blessed is the servant whom the master will find doing so when he comes. Truly, I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. So there's this idea of responsibility without supervision, but a return and a call to account for what has been done, then also reward for those faithful servants. But verse 48, but if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards, the master of the servants will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at the hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. See, last week we hopefully came to this understanding that true servants of Jesus will wait for his return, understanding it may be after a long delay. This week we're going to see that true servants of Jesus recognize they are stewards. They're given a command and a responsibility. And that responsibility is to improve their master's assets. And we're going to get into that a little bit this morning. So turn with me, Matthew 25. We're going to pick up in verse 14. And those first words, for it, reminds us of that context. It goes back to Matthew 25, 1, where he says, the kingdom of heaven will be like. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted them to his property. And that word servants is doulos in the Greek, which means slave or bondservant. And we're going to unpack that a little more in just a minute. To one he gave 5 talents. To another he gave 2. To another one. To each according to his ability. Then he went away. Now let's stop for a minute. Let's talk about what is a talent. A lot of people have problem interpreting what a talent is because it's not a measure of money like a denarius. It's actually a weight of measure. And it doesn't say whether the weight of measure is gold or silver. If it was silver, it could be between $800,000 and $1 million in modern currency. And it could be much more than that if it was gold. A lot of scholars say this is about 20 years of wages. Can you imagine thinking back on the past 20 years and your master, your boss says, hey, here's 20 years of wages. Go invest it well. Go use it well. And I'm going to come back and check on you and see how it goes. Now notice too, he says, he gave them 5, 2, and 1, each according to his ability. See, the master understood what each servant was capable of. Now, let me step out of this text just for a second. We hear a lot of talk in our world today about social justice and this term equity. And maybe you've heard this other term, equality in outcome. The Bible doesn't support that. The Bible recognizes that there are people with different levels of competency, different levels of responsibility, different levels of reward, and some have better outcomes than others. So this idea of social justice equity is a lie. It goes against what we find in the Word of God. Verse 16, who would receive 5 talents, one at once, and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Let's pause there for a minute. Let's talk about what's taking place. See, there's no NASDAQ back then. There's no stock market. He didn't take this large sum of money and just invest it through his smartphone. And then, oh, geez, hit the right stock and doubled his money. There's a lot of work being done by both the servant with 5 talents and the servant with 2. He's buying businesses. He's trading with others. He's buying maybe fishing outfits. This is a long time with lots of hard work. But he got to work immediately. He understood his responsibility as a servant was to improve his master's assets. And you see that the same with the one with 2 talents. He's like, yeah, here's what he gave me. I'm going to put it to work. I'm going to put years and years of hard work to double the assets of what he gave to me. And so their idea was, hey, we're going to work hard because the master's coming back. But the other guy looks like he's afraid. And it says he buried the money in the ground, which actually, they didn't have banks like we have today. That was a common practice for protecting wealth in the first century. Verse 19, now after a long time, sorry, I lost my place. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he had received 5 talents, came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents here. I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little, and I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. Look at that response. It's amazing. First of all, you have the servant coming forward, and you can just feel the sense of accomplishment. I took what you gave me, and I doubled it. Here's double what you trusted me. And look at how the master responds. He says, well done, good and faithful servant. And this is uncommon for first century. The master said, share in your master's joy, and here's more work for you. You've been faithful with a little bit. I'm going to give you a lot more to do, a lot more to manage, a lot more to have authority over. So when you think of the afterlife, if you think you're going to be like looking like a baby wearing a diaper, sitting on a cloud playing a harp, or in the eternal worship service, you need to understand something, that the work you do in this life sets you up for work in the next life. If you think work is the product of the fall, you're missing something. God gave us work, and he gave us creation, and Adam's job, Adam and Eve, when they were tilling the garden and taking care of it, they were unlocking the potential of the creation that God gave them. And yeah, work was hard, but you don't get the sense that they dreaded work. You get the sense we're made for this work. And if you think into the future, what is this servant going to do? He doubled his talents. What will his product be like 1 million years from now, living in eternity on the new earth? We were made to work. So this mindset that, hey, we could just, you know, phone it in and cash a check from the government, that does not honor God. Work was meant to be what we were made for. And he says, here's more responsibility for you. Same thing in verse 22. And he also, who had the 2 talents, came forward saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of the master. So notice what happened here. They weren't given the same. They didn't bring back the same quantity, but his output percentage-wise was exactly the same as the one with 5 talents. Verse 24, he also who had received the 1 talent came forward saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. Now notice what he did. He presumes that the master is wicked, and he's basically calling him a thief. He's impugning his character. And here's how he responds. But the master answered him, You wicked and slothful or lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming, I should have received what was my own with interest. So he's saying, let's say I do take where I have not, I do sow where I have not, I do reap where I have not sown, and I do gather, from the work of others. Then why didn't you at least put my money with the banker so I could gather it with interest? So he says, so take from from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. But the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. That's a saying that we also saw in another parable. And cast the worthless servant out into outer darkness, in that place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Outer darkness is a common reference to he is going to hell after judgment. Let's talk about the meaning of this parable. What does this all mean? If we don't know what it means, we don't know how to apply it. And let me tell you some of the crazy interpretations I came across as I was looking up this parable. One pastor said this parable is about venture capitalism. It's about wise investing. That's what Jesus is talking about. Or making the statement, a faithful servant will invest well. He did not have any spiritual application. It was all financial. Another guy basically said, this is all about stewarding your spiritual gifts. Now, there's a problem with that. We believe that God gave us the gifts, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But also, it implies that if you don't use your gifts, you lose your salvation. We don't believe in that. First of all, we don't believe you earn your salvation by doing works. So if you're here and you think, I'm supposed to serve so I get saved, let me take that pressure off of you. You should serve because you love the King. You should serve because you want to honor him with what he's given you. And you want to improve the assets of your master. So our understanding of the parable should never be in conflict with things that we know that are true from other passages. Also, too, if you can lose your salvation based on this parable, then we're wrong for having a belief in eternal security, which I think that's rock solid. Just like we couldn't earn it, we can't keep it. It wasn't our job to earn it. It's not our job to keep it. And we read in places like Jude where it's written, now to you who is able to keep you from falling, it's Jesus that keeps us walking with him. So let's break this down just for a second. Yeah, the man going on a journey. Well, that's obviously Jesus. We know Jesus left his disciples. He promised to return. The angel said the same way that he left, he's going to come back through the clouds. And we live waiting for that day. When we take communion, we are proclaiming his death. And the Bible says we do that until his return. The servants, these are people that claim to be professing believers. Some claim to be stewards over ministries. And here's the deal. They're not all faithful servants. Then you have the talents. These are entrusted assets or entrusted responsibilities. Every one of us has assets that the Lord has given to us to steward while we're here on this earth. We have a responsibility, if we're Christ followers, to use it in a way that brings an increase and to glorify God. Now, one of the things we need to talk about this morning so we understand the meaning of this is the idea of slavery in the ancient world versus slavery in our recent history. We know that slavery in our history was an evil that was done, and it was based on race. But that's not what slavery in the ancient world was like. Sometimes Romans had slaves from people they conquered. Sometimes it was people that were bankrupt because they didn't have the bankruptcy laws we have. And so the only option, if there was a downturn in the market or bad investment or famine, is sometimes people would sell themselves into slavery and sometimes their whole families. So you need to understand that, because a lot of the English translations use the word servant and it kind of softens the meaning. These were slaves. They did not have an option to opt out of their work like the third wicked servant did. He behaved totally antithetical to his place in life. Now, here's what would often happen. We saw in the text that he gave talents based on their ability. You might have an incredibly gifted business manager as a slave whose money went belly up. He sold himself into slavery, and sometimes masters had slaves that were more gifted and more talented they were, and they would manage the entire household. They would manage their entire wealth. So they can't opt out. And then here's the deal with Christians. We are called doulos of Jesus, bondservants or slaves of Jesus Christ. We don't have the right to opt out and say, Lord, I am not going to use what you gave me for the advancement of your kingdom. And I used to think, what is this about taking the talent, taking the one talent, giving it to the guy with 10? Well, here's what you need to understand. Let's not focus on the talent for a second. Let's focus on the servants. There's only two types of servants, faithful and faithless. Or you could go as far as to say there were true servants and there were false servants. And we live in that reality, waiting for Jesus' return, knowing that even in the church, there are true and false servants. And true servants will steward what God has entrusted to them. They will steward it well as a first century servant or slave working to improve the assets of their master. See, the wicked servant lived as if he believed he would not have to give an account someday. And if he did, he was just going to give back what the master gave him. He also, he believed that the character of the master was evil. He had an incorrect view of his master. Now think about this week and last week. You had the faithless bridesmaids, or the foolish virgins, as the Bible calls them. They thought their job was too easy. They didn't have the oil to preparedness. They were not ready for the return of Christ. This unfaithful servant, this wicked servant, thought his job was too hard and did nothing in service of his master. So how do we apply a story like this? Well, we need to ask the question, what does it mean for someone to live as a servant entrusted to improve his master's asset? Is this only about money? Well, let me start with what is the correct view of our holdings? And here's the first part of that. We need to recognize all that we have is God's. Every good thing God gave you is his. We're talking your intelligence, your sense of humor, your giftedness, your ability to make money. Maybe it's your ability to teach or to unpack spiritual truths. Maybe you're really, really good with kids. Maybe you're good with teens. Maybe you have the heart, you have mercy, and you're able to feel empathy and encourage those who are very discouraged. All those things belong to Jesus, and all those things need to be brought under his authority for you to be living as someone who is looking to improve our master's assets. Also, too, we're supposed to manage it in a way that brings an increase. You might be thinking, I don't know what you mean by that. Well, can you think of maybe two friends that need Jesus? Maybe if you do nothing else in life, but you make it your mission, God gave you this relationship with these people that are far from God. They like you. They trust you. Maybe they even ask you to pray for them. And then in the last days, you're standing before the master, and all you have is you're like, Lord, I got these two souls that now belong to you. That's advancing the kingdom. That's increasing the quality of the assets. You need to understand that last part is someday you're going to have to give an answer for your stewardship, and we will have to give an answer for our stewardship. Our church will have to give an answer for its stewardship, which is why we have money for benevolence to help take care of people that are in bad financial places. It's why we give to missions, because we believe the words of Matthew 28. Think about Matthew is recording this parable, and think about what he writes at the end of the book. Go and make disciples of all nations. Improve the quality of the master's assets by expanding his kingdom with the gospel. Peter said it this way. He said in 1 Peter 4, verses 7 through 10, and 1 Peter 4:10 is my favorite verse. He says, the end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be controlled and sober-minded for the sake of your prayers. Peter's writing, looking, thinking, the last days are here. Be sober-minded, not so that you can plan perfectly. Be sober-minded so that you can pray. Because prayer is a primary work of God's people. And if he thought he was close, how much closer are we a couple thousand years later? Above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. Do you know that in Matthew 24, Jesus says in the last days, the love of most is going to grow cold? But Peter says, hey, it's getting close. Above all, love each other deeply. That's what makes a church, is right doctrine and love for one another and love for the King. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another. And look at that word, as good stewards of God's varied grace. Matthew 24, he talked about the servant who was a good steward, who took care of the other servants and didn't beat them. You see the parable Jesus is teaching about masters that are or servants that are good stewards and increase the master's holdings. And we use our gifts as good stewards of God's varied grace. The NIV says it this way. Each one of you should use whatever gift you've received, faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms. So think about it. You love children. You serve children. Even if you're a younger person who's just a little bit older than them, you're a channel of God's grace into their life. If you can deal with crazy teenagers and you're like, I should be serving in youth ministry, you serving in youth ministry is channeling God's grace into their lives. If you decide to be a life group host, or maybe a Bible study teacher at some point, using those gifts is God's grace being lived out in their life. So the question I want to ask you this morning as we get ready to close, what are you currently doing to serve the King right now? What are you doing? Do you recognize what he's given you? Who is that person? Or maybe it's a group of people that God wants you to reach. And maybe another question you should ask is, what abilities has God entrusted to you that you could be using for kingdom advancement? And maybe you're sitting here going, I just want to know where to start. I don't know where to start. This all sounds good. It's a big responsibility. If I love the king, he's coming back. I got to be ready. Let me tell you where you can get started. See, the church is the place where we're supposed to discover our gifts, use our gifts, bless others, and also use those gifts to build the church. And what used to be in American culture was the church was the center of the community. That has changed. And so what has happened is people have deprioritized the church. I joke that it's now a winter sport for a lot of people. You know, baseball comes, they're gone. You know, soccer comes, people, you know, find it difficult to make it. And somehow during those seasons, we need to find a way to use our gifts, stay connected to God, and stay connected to other believers. So here's a couple places you can start. One, you can take Intro to Serving when it comes up in August. And then we have a serve workshop that follows that. We gather all the Sunday servants together. We have a light breakfast. We have an opening session. And then you meet in your service teams to build relationship, to learn how we can better serve people as they come through those doors and become a part of the inner workings of the church. Also, two, take a spiritual gifts test. See, at our church, a lot of churches use those things for people to justify their position, or, you know, everyone seems to have the gift of discernment since 1990, then you look at their life and it's like, no, you don't know what discernment is. And here's the deal with that. We use them to help you find your fit, not to justify anyone's leadership role or let them use it to force their way to serve where they're not gifted. Or we want you to just try serving in an area that you're interested in. For something that you thought, man, I'd always like to give that a try. Give it a try. Maybe God will bless it. Maybe you'll discover that he's gifted you for it. And maybe you'll be able to hand back to him an, you know, an improved asset that he's given you that you use to give him glory. The question is, why do we do all this? Why do we offer these things? It's not so we can check a box as leadership. We do these things because we want you to understand that we together should work with the understanding that when the king returns, faithful servants will be rewarded and the faithless are exposed and sent into hell forever. We want you to fulfill the purpose to be a faithful slave of the one true king and to use your abilities to expand his kingdom and give him glory. That is why we do what we do. That is why I encourage you to do what you do. And this church has had so many faithful servants over the years. If you're ones that have been there from the beginning, helping us set up and tear down the worship area, the gym, the kids areas, all that went on to make Bridge make it those first 10 years, to you I want to say thank you. It's because of people like you that this church has been blessed. Thank you to all those that have used your ability to earn income to bless this church. And I say thank you with an understanding that we aren't done yet. And the reason I know that is because the king isn't here yet.